Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and this is a question that I don't know the answer to, but it's not a rhetorical question. Western intervention, I don't know what the last big example of it is that you were sort of here for, you were in the front row for. A lot of us would think immediately of Iraq or Afghanistan and how that turned out. The regime in Iran is every bit as hideous as Saddam Hussein's or indeed the Taliban's, in some ways worse, and it's been in situ for a lot longer. But do we still feel that the West, particularly a West led by Donald Trump, whose administration also shoot protesters in the street, should be intervening at all?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, LBC has been told the UK's terror watchdog could revisit laws to ban Iran's Revolutionary Guard following a violent crackdown on protesters. 500 people have reportedly been killed in anti-government demonstrations in the country over the past few weeks. Sir Keir Starmer is now facing growing calls to proscribe the corps in a show of solidarity with demonstrators. But speaking earlier, the Cabinet Minister Peter Kyle wouldn't be drawn on whether it's something that'll be fast-tracked.
When it comes to using the prescription ability that we have, they are for the domestic terror organisations. And we're talking here about a foreign state organisation. So Jonathan Hall, who is the independent reviewer of terror legislation, looked into this last summer, and he has said that the domestic legislation isn't fit to be used in these purposes, and he might well be making recommendations of how we change the law.
Separately, Peter Kyle's told LBC that Lord Mandelson should apologise to Jeffrey Epstein's survivors for his friendship with the late sex offender. The former UK ambassador to the US has been heavily criticised for declining to do so in an interview, but Peter Mandelson has stressed that he had no prior knowledge of Epstein's crimes when he knew him. London has recorded its lowest number of murders and manslaughters in more than a decade. The Metropolitan Police say there were 97 homicides in the capital last year. That's down 11% on the previous year. Malaysia and Indonesia have become the first countries to block X's controversial AI chatbot, Grok. Authorities say it's being misused to generate sexually explicit and non-consensual images. The UK's regulator, Ofcom, is considering whether to take action against the platform. And Adolescence was one of the big winners at the Golden Globes overnight. It picked up Best Limited Series and Acting Awards for Stephen Graham, Erin Doherty and 16-year-old Owen Cooper.
What started off as what I thought, you know, I might be okay at, I might be awful at it, I never know. So I took a risk and I went to drama classes. I was the only boy there. It was embarrassing, but, you know, I got through it.
One battle after another and Hamnet were named Best Film in their respective categories. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 4 at 10,129. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a dry but breezy day for most. Rain continuing for parts of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. I've got a horrible feeling that this is something that's supposed to go in the opposite direction. Do you find your opinions are getting stronger or weaker as you get older? They get stronger, right? Do you become more entrenched, more set in your ways? How strong were your opinions about the Second Gulf War, when George W. Bush sought to essentially finish what his father had started in the Middle East? And a sort of wreak vengeance as well, arguably, for the September the 11th atrocity, and decided that toppling Saddam Hussein, who had nothing really to do with the September the 11th atrocity, would be a good way of setting the record straight, or a good way of rebalancing the world. I bet you had quite a strong opinion about it. If you're the well, depending on your age, of course, it's perfectly possible that you weren't born. But if you were conscious and of an age to take an interest in the news, and if you are, I suppose, the sort of person who enjoys listening to a radio station like LBC, then you probably had quite a strong opinion about it. It was very much the bread and butter of current affairs debates. Can I make a small confession to you? I, at the time, was doing my first ever job in the arena of public opining. It was the first time I'd ever really been paid to talk on air about my opinions. And I'm very grateful for one thing, well, two things. One, the opportunity to move into this ludicrous apology for a living. But the other was that the world of viral clips and internet ubiquity did not exist when I started cutting my teeth on a television program, actually, not a radio program, because the way that the program was set up meant that every morning you had to have a pro and an anti, whatever the subject. There was the same three of us on the panel every day. And there was a host, Matthew Wright, now, of course, of this parish, and myself and a journalist called Kate Silverton would have to argue with each other. We were never allowed to agree. The nature of the program was such that one of us had to be pro and one of us had to be anti. And that meant, inevitably, that you often or sometimes had to argue the position that you didn't hold, because otherwise the whole premise of the program wouldn't have worked. And we certainly didn't encourage telling the audience that one of us was arguing a position that we didn't really hold. Because I'm a bit of an idiot, hopefully a bit less of an idiot today than I was then, I rather relished the opportunity to argue the opposite of what I believed, because it was a bit like, I don't know, it was a bit like being a Harlem Globetrotter. It wasn't normal basketball, but it was an opportunity to show off a skill set that I was unjustifiably proud of. So I would often find myself on television, on Channel 5, 20-odd years ago, arguing very persuasively and very passionately something that I didn't actually believe in. I want you to know something, and this will sound a little bit silly, but I'm deadly serious. I've never done that here. I would never do that here. I don't have to. I'm not complaining. It was what I signed up for when I took that job. And B, I wouldn't want you to think that I would ever indulge in those sort of tactics today. But I did it quite a lot. And it means I sometimes can't remember. Because you can argue yourself into a position as well. It's very much sixth form debating society. But the really good debaters are the ones who can win debates when they're arguing something they don't even agree with themselves. And it means that you almost argue yourself into a position. It was such a long time ago that I can remember arguing on the television that the United Kingdom, and more obviously the United States of America, had a moral obligation, a sort of international duty, to topple Saddam Hussein. And I can also remember going on the march against the war in Glasgow. And I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit that I can't completely remember where my authentic or my sincere self lay. Because you argue something so often that you almost end up believing it yourself. But I think I was very 52-48, an infernal ratio, before we even knew it was the infernal ratio, and I wobbled a bit. But the argument that I always sat with, the argument that I think nudged me into the 52 rather than the 48, was that if you have 10 hideous despots lined up against the wall, and you've only got one bullet, you have to shoot one of them. I apologise for the slightly sort of brutal nature of that analogy, but it's figurative, obviously, except in Saddam Hussein's case, of course, it's literal as well. But that was what I thought was the zinger, what I thought was the argument. That's why I began by asking whether you think your opinions have got stronger. Because if I said weaker, it's funny, right? So if your opinions got weaker, if I said more considered, have your opinions become more nuanced, more thoughtful, more complex as you've got older? That doesn't sound the same as saying, have they become weaker? Have your opinions got stronger, or have they become more authentic and valid? Because, you know, the idea of picking a side or going all footballification or binary on complicated issues, particularly of geopolitics, is a little bit absurd, right? A little bit absurd. But I can't remember. And I remember that little bit of argument that I thought was pretty unassailable. And I don't think that now. And part of the reason I don't think that now is, as I sort of glance at my screens in the studio this morning and see that the United States is contemplating military intervention in Iran, where the regime is objectively hideous, just as Saddam Hussein's regime was objectively hideous, or the Taliban's regime in Afghanistan was objectively hideous. Libya, perhaps. Well, definitely objectively hideous. But what have all those countries got in common, apart from Western intervention? Yeah, exactly. So, the lessons of history are pretty stark, aren't they? Confine it even perhaps to American-led intervention. Confine it still further, focus further on American-led intervention in the Middle East. It rarely ends well, does it? It rarely ends well. And that's why today I have a question for you, an obvious question, a question that you have almost certainly already established. But it is, I mean, on a complicated level, it is what should the West do? And then obviously on a simpler level, it is should, and how relevant is the identity of the United States president? You have an administration that shoots innocent civilians in the street and lies about it. And that's important, you know. Obviously the numbers in Iran dwarf the numbers in Minneapolis, but the principle is the same. Peaceful protesters being murdered for dissent. Not even for dissent, really, just because the security services in America, it's ICE. In Iran, it's the secret police, the religious police. They are out of control. They are a law unto themselves. They act with complete impunity. And I imagine the Ayatollahs would queue up to lie about what the religious police in Iran have done in exactly the same way that Donald Trump and his closest cronies have queued up to lie about what happened to Renee Nicole Good on the streets of Minneapolis, even as we can see with our own eyes and ears that they are lying. Still they lie. Still they lie. And that's important. Not because the two events are exactly the same by any stretch of the imagination, but because it would be an American-led intervention. I mean, it can't really come from anywhere else. Technically, I suppose, China or Russia could get involved. Russia is pretty overstretched in Ukraine, and China, I doubt, is particularly interested at this point. But the... Also, they're sympathetic to the current regime, so they wouldn't want to get involved in overthrowing it. So it would be an American-led intervention. And America is led by Donald Trump, a man whose flirtations with fascism edge ever closer to complete consummation. And we would be, I imagine, trailing along behind. Or was it Poodle? Was Tony Blair called a Poodle? George W. Bush's Poodle, if I remembered that correctly? It is a question about domestic political decisions, as in what should Keir Starmer do, what should the UK do. But it's actually a question about the world, isn't it? It's a question about whether or not you think the West should do anything in Iran. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Because I apologise for this, and this is why I slightly worry. It's all right for you if your opinions are getting more thoughtful and more nuanced as you get older, but it's not exactly ideal traditionally for a radio phone-in host. I blame therapy. But I don't know now. I suspect that the arguments I used about invading Iraq no longer persuade even me. No matter how hideous the regime may be, the West exercising its might and muscle to change regime never or extra... I can't think of an example when it's worked really well. Perhaps that could be one way for you to get into this conversation. But it rarely works. So short... And Syria would be the example of non-intervention. And, you know, imperfect, though the current regime in Syria is, it is at least the consequence of Syrian action as opposed to external promotion. And you've got a former ISIS fighter now in charge in Syria. And Syria arguably fulfilled all the criteria that people opposed to the Second Gulf War didn't feel that the Second Gulf War fulfilled. You know, there's a stronger case for intervention in Syria than there was for intervention in Iraq, objectively speaking. And yet we did the one with the lower justification and didn't do the one with the greater. But would you, I don't know enough to say that Syria is in slightly better shape than Middle Eastern countries where America has led intervention. I don't know enough to say that. But I think it is. I suspect it is. And it certainly feels different to have a leader who has risen organically through the ranks as opposed to one who has been essentially imposed externally. So, if you have Iranian heritage, and a lot of people in London do, I know quite a few, of course. We were treated to insights from Shaparak or Sandy or Omid Jalili when the last rebellions on the street looked as if they may come to fruition. But I just want to know whether or... Because you remember that the Venezuelan... Many Venezuelan people, particularly expats, it's hard to get a handle on how people in Venezuela felt about Donald Trump's actions because they'd have been locked up if they were caught protesting in favour of them on the streets of Caracas. But outside Venezuela, an awful lot of Venezuelans greeted the news that their a dictator, their unelected president, had been kidnapped by American forces with joy. It's almost as if my enemy's enemy is my friend, which is a cliche for a reason. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it, morally and intellectually. Of course my enemy's enemy is my friend, until they've dealt with my enemy. And then we have to find out what they think about me. So even within 24 hours, I think, of the Venezuelan operation, Venezuelans were contacting this program to air misgivings or to worry. And they were right to worry, I think, because Donald Trump don't have no interest in them or democracy, as we know, as has become crystal clear. But if you were Iranian, would you care about whatever instruments it was that were going to prize the Ayatollah from power? Would it matter at all that it was an intervention led by an administration that also shoots protesters dead in the street and then lies about it, albeit currently on a much smaller scale? I honestly don't know. And I'm glad I don't know, because it would feel a little bit ridiculous to sit here as a bloke who lives in Brentford and grew up in Kidderminster and somehow had arrived at very strong and pungent opinions about what should happen in Tehran, what should happen to the brave resistance, the people of Iran, finding increasing voice and vigour in the face of a hideous autocratic religious regime. I don't know, which is why I want to know what you think. And the number you need to tell me is 0345 6060 973. And bring whatever you want to it. Please don't feel that I'm in charge of conversations like this, as I sometimes am on other days on other subjects. Iran, as Joe points out, is a nuclear state. We don't know how nuclear they are. Someone probably does. I imagine the CIA do. But that maybe is a bit of a game changer. What if weapons of mass destruction were real in this case, as opposed to the argument for them to be a reason to go into Iraq when they turned out not to not to exist. So there it is. If you have Iranian heritage, I think your contribution will be more interesting, perhaps, than mine. But I don't want to confine the conversation to that, because Western intervention involves the West. There's a clue in the title. And the scars that Iraq has left on our political consciousness run deep. You know, the idea that we will always make things better by getting involved probably should have been consigned to the history books generations ago. But it underpins a lot of the chatter today about whether or not the Americans, and by association the West, should intervene in Iran. I want to know what you think. But crucially, I also want to know why.
LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Find me somebody to love.
Hey, Beds, wake up. The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on.
Sorry, I'm just so comfy.
I bet you are. There's up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses. So shop now and save big. Dreams. Love your bed.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw, so you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man, so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw, so...
Let's go, Kev! Goat cheese bagel for lunch!
Woo-hoo! This could get tiresome.
Is it your lucky day? Search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And it is, I suppose, contingent upon all of us to learn the lessons of the past. So what are those lessons? Has there been, this is a genuine question, has there been a kind of objectively successful Western-sponsored regime change in a Middle Eastern country? Egypt's worse than it was. Do you remember the Arab Spring when we thought everything was going to change? I don't know, and I apologise for not knowing. Tunisia has slid back into repression. Syria, which didn't have a Western-led intervention, has endured the hell of civil war. Egypt has ended up, according to Ian Birrell, one of my favourite writers, in the I newspaper today, with an even worse dictator. Libya collapsed into chaos, despite moderates actually winning elections. Tribal divisions proved insuperable, and on it goes. Arab and North African, I don't know. And just because it's never worked before, does that mean it will never work in the future? Norrie is in Derby. Norrie, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say that the West should intervene 100%. Because, Iranians are very different from Iraqis or Afghanis or Syrians.
Or Libyans. Or Egyptians.
Yes.
Or North Africans. Libyans are North African, aren't they?
Yes. Well, they are, because they have been trying to get rid of this regime for so long. And they are very well educated. They are organized. And this regime is just killing them. And the majority of Iranians' values aligns with Western values. They want democracy, freedom, separation of state from religion. And what is happening, if you know, you don't know Farsi, but if you go to...
How do you know that? Yeah. How dare you make assumptions about me?
You know, if you go to social media platforms for a long time, what is happening in Iran is what happened during the Middle Ages in Europe.
Yes.
They are reviewing, questioning what religion means. And so now... the majority are being killed really on the streets. There's so many millions on the streets of Iran. And we just want to get rid of this government who supports terrorism. And it's just good if West intervenes, but it doesn't have to be military intervention. It can be a cyber attack to stop the... this is the social completely internet blackout. There are so many things can be done, and we have now the crown prince who is really leading the transition team, and they have a program. It's different from Egypt or Syria. They didn't know what they wanted, but people of Iran know what they want.
And I think Reza Pahlavi, is the prince.
Yes,
yes.
Yes. And he has never said that he wants to become a king. He just wants to be a leader of transition, because most people in Iran like his father, and they regret what they did in 1979. And their children are blaming their parents for doing that revolution. And I think that people on the left, if they're closing their eyes to what's happening, it's you know, clear violation of human rights.
And who do you mean? Because I don't quite get that. You mean people on the left in Iran or people on the left outside Iran?
Outside Iran.
What do, mean like mad people on the mad left? Because, I mean, I am largely speaking on the left, but I certainly wouldn't. But that was my only worry, actually, is that by being opposed to Western intervention, because it very rarely, if ever, makes things better, you can be in danger of sounding like you are somehow supporting the hideous regime that's in place.
Fair enough.
But because there is only two, there are only two choices. You either back every mode of removal or you don't.
Yeah, well, as I said, it doesn't have to be troops on the ground.
Yeah, but how do you feel about the prospect? How do you feel about the prospect of troops on the ground?
Oh, I don't think it's a good idea.
Right.
But there's so many things now with the modern warfare. So many things can be done.
You're talking about Donald Trump, though. Donald Trump won't do anything unless it's going to look good on TV.
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, he cares, I mean, about himself. And at this moment of history, our interest, the same as his interest, and we don't care about, you know, we just want to get rid of this government. And
I take on board what you've said about other countries and comparisons with other countries where Western sponsored regime change has taken place. But does it not? And I understand that you're not full-throatedly calling for traditional military intervention, although that is, of course, what's already being talked about in Washington. But does that not worry you at all? I mean, does Pahlavi have the wherewithal to hold a country together, or would there? Because I always think of Yugoslavia, actually, post Tito, not a Middle Eastern country, but a European country, and it takes a peculiar type of character sometimes to hold together disparate factors, to hold together all the strands. And when Tito left, look what Yugoslavia broke up into, so many different factions and so many different countries ultimately. I don't know enough about Iran to know whether or not the country that existed under the Shah, under Pahlavi's father, prior to 1979, has continued to exist in secret almost, and what the removal of the Ayatollahs would do would be to allow something similar to that, something stable and civilized, to move back into the vacuum created. I don't know. Is that what you feel would happen?
No, I think that it's not going to be like that. If you go back to the history of Iran, Iran is a country of 2,500 years.
Yes.
And had been attacked so many times. But the Iranians are all connected to have one country. And when it comes to that, we all put our differences aside.
So you wouldn't have a sort of tribal breakdown like we had in Libya. You wouldn't have religious sectarianism. You wouldn't. So who would mourn the passing of the current regime? The people in it?
The people in Iran who are against the regime are with a crown prince.
But who would mourn the passing of the current regime? I mean, because what we don't know, you will know this, but I don't know this, it can't have been sustained without support from within the country, beyond actual government, beyond the actual religious police. There must be people in Iran who would rather live under this form of regime than not.
There's a minority.
Yes.
Maybe less than 5%.
Okay.
Okay, so the majority want the regime change.
Final question. If US troops landed in Tehran tomorrow or nearby, of course, and set sights upon the capital, or if US bombs started dropping on Iran, how do you think you'd feel then, Nori?
Well, they're not going to go on the ground. They're not going to go. So there are other means of doing that.
I'm asking how you'd feel bombs then. What about Iraq? What about American bombs dropping on Iran? How would you feel about that? Is it a price worth paying?
If the bombs are dropped on the place where the Revolutionary Guards are, I don't mind it at all.
Okay. I'm pretty hard to guarantee that, though, isn't it? As we've learnt with pretty much every other military engagement in history.
Well, you should see the messages that come from Iran, and they ask for this.
Yes, and I'm sure if I was there, I'd be the same. And I'm sure if I was Iranian, I'd be the same. And I'm sure that somewhere inside, if you were to confine my own ludicrous pontifications to justice, natural justice, then I'd be exactly where you are. But I can't help thinking of all the times that people in the West have called for interventions in the Middle East and then not been around for the aftermath, not been around for the repercussions, not been around for the failure to actually deliver what had been promised to the people. But yeah, you're right. If it was my country and it was in the grip of a regime like this one, I would probably welcome almost anything that reset the nation and removed the regime. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Am I right in thinking that we Brits no longer feel quite as gung-ho and warlike as we did in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, as we did in the run-up to Gulf War II? I don't know. I mean, I feel a lot less gung-ho than I did, but that's probably just because I'm thinking about things a little bit more than I used to. And Norrie's case is powerful. What do you do if you've got one bullet and you've got the despots lined up against the wall? Do you take out the one that you can take out, or do you wait for it to happen organically from within the country, which looks like a greater possibility today than it has done at almost any point since 1979? Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
LBC has been told the UK's terror watchdog could revisit laws to ban Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps following a violent crackdown on protesters. 500 people have reportedly been killed in anti-government demonstrations in the past few weeks. London has recorded its lowest number of murders and manslaughters in more than a decade. The Metropolitan Police said there were 97 homicides in the capital last year. That's down 11% on the previous year. And thousands of people in Kent and parts of Sussex are without water. South East Water say a number of issues are to blame, including burst pipes due to the recent cold weather. LBC weather, a dry but breezy day for most, rain for the northwest of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Caremark, passionately, professionally and cheerfully, delivers excellent home care. But it's so much more than that. Caremark is about improving life at home and keeping you for longer. From simple visits to more complex needs, Caremark has you covered. For a friendly chat, visit caremark.co.uk. There's no place quite like home. There's no care quite like Caremark.
Get your home entertainment sorted with deals on EE's award-winning bundles.
Why is it award-winning?
Because you can flex between your subscriptions like Netflix, Discovery, Now, and TNT.
Sofa sessions?
Sorted. Oh, yeah. Plus, it's powered by ultra-fast full-fiber 150 on the UK's best broadband technology. With absolutely nothing to pay up front.
Nothing?
Nice.
Offer ends 29th of January.
New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
Dreaming of a getaway? With P&O Cruises, you can wake up to a new paradise every day. And with new all-inclusive packages now making a splash, why not go all in and get even more out of your next holiday?
P&O Cruises. Holiday like never before.
Limited availability on all-inclusive packages.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stuff Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right, Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Not Catch Adventure Park.
The fun play.
Book now at notcatch.com.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:33, two headlines for you this morning. Trump mulls, quotes, very strong, end quotes, military options in Iran. And Iran threatens retaliation if the United States attacks. So the stakes are already quite high. And then if we were to take the Venezuelan example, which is clumsy, but not, I don't think, irrelevant, then you would remove the current regime and replace it with Donald Trump. I appreciate that's unlikely, given that they're not on the same continent, but he is currently the de facto, in his own mind at least, the de facto leader of the acting president of Venezuela. So, you know, you know how fond I am of cliché. Is it better the devil you know, or is it be careful what you wish for? I don't know. I honestly don't know. A few people unhappy with the characterization of the Shah's regime as being all sweetness and light, which is a valid depiction, although Ian in Fife is a little strong in his language. This woman, he says, referring to Noroi, is deluded. The Shah was a Western stooge who tortured his people on a regular basis. The appetite for the Islamic revolution had to be built on something. Caroline writes, what is the alternative to intervention? Tens of thousands more people being tortured and executed simply for holding up banners. You get beaten for death for wearing your headscarf wrong, of course, which is the atrocity, the hideous crime that prompted the last protests such as these on the streets of Iran. But I don't know why. I just wonder whether we need to be a little bit more thoughtful than we have been in the past about the wisdom of a Western-led intervention in the Middle East, particularly when the West itself is led by, well, a man whose instincts seem to lie a lot nearer to autocratic oppressive regimes than they do to traditional liberal democracies. Yassi is in Ealing. Yassi, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Just want to say I'm a great fan of the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to say that the situation in Iran is very complicated, but also at a very critical point.
Yes.
And I think what worries me is that when I was on Instagram, I've now come off it because I was getting really angry.
Okay.
I was seeing a lot of Iranians reposting supports from Nigel Farage and Tommy Robinson, and they keep saying, where are the left? You know, obviously these guys have got our back, but you don't. And it's just then seeing Trump saying, yes, I will intervene, and then, no, I'll negotiate, all that. It's just really, really scary times, I think, for Iran.
Well, again, you don't know how much of that is real and how much of it is, you know, the
exactly.
percent, you know, bots and Russian propaganda and just constantly dedicating everything to driving wedges through the West, dividing the West. I haven't heard anybody, genuinely, and I don't spend as much time following it as you do, but I haven't heard anybody ideologically opposed to intervening, just logistically or intelligently opposed to it on the grounds that it might make things worse for the people of Iran. And I don't know what the answer to that is. The point is, nobody does. Nobody does.
I think... anyway, throughout history, as you say, I do think that the Brits, I guess, the current British government perhaps is worried about making a mess like they did in Iraq. But at the same time, if Trump gets in, he just wants to break and go. I don't think the MAGA are interested in spending money in Iran and investing.
So what do you want? Do you know what you want? I presume you're of Iranian heritage, are you? Yes, I presume.
I am. I lived here since I was 17, 1998.
Right.
I know what we want. Now, whether it's achievable is a different thing. So Iran wants democracy. They want to be able to have a say in the country. And that's exactly what we want. Now, how you achieve that is... It's tricky, isn't it? Because at the moment, Iranian people are coming out. They have been saying for years they don't want this government. They don't want Islamic Republic.
Yeah.
But they don't have the backing of military. And without backing of military, it's going to be extremely difficult for them to break free.
Is the military... I mean, deeply loyal to the current regime, do we know?
I wonder whether it's that they're deeply loyal or whether they have a lot to lose as well.
Because the Revolutionary Guard is as corrupt as it is callous. And so
they are very corrupt. They have a lot of assets. You know, obviously the way that the Ayatollah has put it all in place, they know... he made them powerful. So,
what happens? What would the vacuum look like? It's why a lot of people are pointing at the Shah's son, Prince Reza Pahlavi, with, I mean, perhaps a little bit of rose-tinted spectacles. But if I mean, if they had to flee like a kind of you know, flee to Moscow or wherever you go if you're a deposed Iranian leader. Where did Assad went to Moscow, didn't he? And a vacuum essentially is left behind. Whoever may have the whip hand in that moment, as you remind us, they won't have control of infrastructure or the army to a degree that would allow them to impose stability overnight, for want of a better word.
Exactly.
So what would the vacuum look like? Do you know? I mean, do you think of your country? Do you think of Iran as a homogenous country?
It's hard for me to say. I've not lived there for so long.
Well, exactly.
I hear different points of view. I know that there are Shah supporters, but yes. I also know there are some who don't support him at all. But I also know ones who don't support him and think, actually, you know what? Maybe he can come in and rescue Iran almost. And then, like, hand over the power.
As a holding tactic. Again, I think, did Václav Havel do something like that in the Czech Republic? I can't quite think of historical precedents for all of the things that we hope will happen. I think if people achieve power, even if they started off with the best of intentions, something can change within them. And I think if they achieve power as a consequence of Western intervention and Western support, then it is, as we've discovered all over the world, just in the last 30 years, it can be very, very fragile. But I can't sit here, Yassi, and say, just leave Iran to it. I feel, I don't know, there's almost a moral responsibility to help the people who are being killed in the hundreds simply for standing up for what is right.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if I were to look at a very optimistic, as you say, rose-tinted glass, yes. I'd say, yeah, get in, you know, just like don't kill anyone, but support Iran and just help, even from a military perspective, just like stop all the killing. But the reality of it is that how will that play out? And also the Shah, the Reza Pahlavi, is supported by Israel. We know that as a fact. We know that he's been meeting with Saroj. We know where he stands. So for me...
I didn't know that. What's he doing there? Yeah, so be careful, careful what you wish for.
I think these people do not really care about Iran. I don't know. I think they've got Israel.
Well, I think we can be pretty clear that Donald Trump doesn't really care about Iran, or indeed Venezuela, or Greenland in particular. But that doesn't mean that the events won't unfold as they have in one of those three countries and as they may yet do in two others. I'm glad we're having this conversation. I'm glad so many Iranian people are talking to us. We haven't talked about sanctions yet. We haven't talked about the role that the West already plays in Iran and the impact that that has. You can't sanction a nation without punishing the people who are now protesting against the regime. You punish a regime by punishing the people. The idea being that it creates pressure points. I don't know. I historically, again, what are the best examples of that working? Nina is in Camden. Nina, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello, Nina.
I'm getting feedback.
Well, do you mean in a radio way, or do you mean you're hearing from people in Iran?
No, actually, I'm getting feedback as I'm speaking to you.
Well, you need to turn... Have you got your radio on?
No, actually, the radio is not on.
Okay, well, I'm good, Nina, but I'm not a telecoms engineer. I'll pop you on hold and see if anybody can help. Maria is in Munich. Maria, what would you like to say?
Hello. Thank
Maria.
You. I'm a long-time listener. I am a British-Iranian living in Europe, and I just don't want to go back to Britain because of Brexit.
Fair enough.
I have been listening to you for many years on COVID, on Trump. I hate Trump's guts. But on this occasion, we need his help.
Yes.
We need his help.
Any port in a storm. Regime, my enemy's enemy is my friend.
Yeah. Kind of. And I am essentially a Republican.
Right.
But... I only see the leadership of the transition in Prince Reza Pahlavi because I saw what it was like before the revolution. I saw what his father was like before the revolution. And I saw what he did for 47 years. He never changed his words. He called these guys occupiers and he didn't impose his views on the people. People called his name. And when, for the first time, he asked last week for Thursday and Friday to come and chant his name and not to go out even, he said, just chant your slogans. He didn't even say what a slogan. People poured onto the streets and they are still there. they're being killed in thousands, James. And if you see any Iranians, if you know any Iranians walking around you like zombies,
yes.
They have been awake until 4 o'clock in the morning crying, watching horrid videos. So I have been a journalist in Iran. I was a journalist in Britain and also in France since I left. I can tell you this regime came to power with lies and accusations. If you Google Rex cinema disaster and read about it, the regime put a cinema full of viewers before the revolution, just a few months before the revolution, to fire 400 people at least, burned alive, and they blamed it on the Shah. And then that was one of the things that made people very angry. And the truth came out 20 years later, but that was too late.
Respectfully, I don't know that I'm going to get any defenders of the current regime on this program, and I'm not quite sure how to deal with them if I do. So the hideousness of, this is the regime, of course, that killed Mahsa Amini, and some of the stuff, yes, that filters through to the West is going to be the tip of icebergs for people living in Iran. But where do you personally derive your confidence that things couldn't possibly get worse?
Because because there is a massacre there. In 2019, even Reuters, which was...
Yeah, but am I wrong? And forgive me, because I don't know anything nearly as much about this as you do, but I keep thinking of Saddam Hussein, and I heard similar arguments then about how, morality, duty demands that we intervene. He's throwing people through paper shredders. His sons are ogres, hideous. The Kurds have been treated with Mahsa Amini, also a Kurd, of course.
No, they faked these weapons of mass destruction. I was on the mass protest in the middle of London.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm pointing out that nobody thought things could get worse post Saddam. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward 5 years and you've got ISIS.
No. Iran is the Iranian people have kicked religion out of their lives. Any country in the region is going towards extremism. Iran has moved backwards the other way, not actually forward. They know the value of secularism. They also know that religion is a private thing, and they don't want to.
You're talking about the average citizen who lives in direct contravention of the prevailing winds in the country, because it's the most Islamist regime on the planet. And yet, so it's going to hit people as a little odd for you to talk about the Iranian people as being irreligious or unreligious when they live in the most repressive religious regime on the planet. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it's quite a big ask for outsiders to accept.
I have been in touch. My family is in Iran. I was in Iran last year for 10 months when I went to care for my sick mother, and they confiscated my passport for 10 months. She died in the middle of my stay. I can't say thank you. And I continued to stay until I got my passport back, and my Finnish daughter was here. And it was very upsetting. I could see people have nothing to lose, nothing.
Except their lives, and they're losing their lives to protesting. So I understand the logic of your position, and I apologise for the crass question, but I asked Norrie this, and I'll ask you as well. How would you feel if Donald Trump started dropping bombs on Iran?
No, he wouldn't drop bombs. They are.
Well, he's already said that. What do you think strong military intervention means?
Yes, that means something like a controlled precision attack against certain targets.
Yeah, well, I heard that. I heard that about Baghdad just a couple of decades ago. I don't know. I mean, I hope you're right. And I guess I wouldn't trust Donald Trump as far as I can throw him, and you wouldn't either. But there comes a time when if nobody else is in a position to do the thing that you desperately want to happen, then you don't really care who does it. I don't know what precision attacks would look like in this kind of context to take out the regime in the same way that they tried to take out the nuclear capabilities. And I don't know that anyone would really be able to object to that. Massive, massive caveat if it worked.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Sir Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, the Labour Mayor of London, taking his cue from our interview with Tom Kerridge as being part of the catalyst for the change that Rachel Reeves is likely to bring in. Sir Sadiq Khan saying, well, I wasn't for it anyway, which tells you a lot, I think, about the dawning reality on number 11 from within the Labour Party itself.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Always dreamt of running your own business. It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Live and love to the last breath. This January, fall in love with the passion, drama, and heartbreak of the iconic opera that inspired Pretty Woman and Moulin Rouge. Experience the Royal Opera's grand production of La Traviata from the 8th of January to the 17th of February at the Royal Opera House. Get great seats from just £23. Don't miss La Traviata. Book now at rbo.org.uk.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Here is the problem, or indeed the rub, as one of my favourite correspondents on Blue Sky, No Hostages, describes it. And they cite a survey conducted by a Netherlands-based institute in August of last year, finding, I mean, the headline is that a majority of Iranians reject the Islamic Republic, but the detail is considerably more nuanced than that. Let me just run you through it. A secular republic was backed by 26% of respondents. 21% supported a monarchy. Another 22% said they lacked enough information to decide. And 11% said that the form of an alternative system was not important so long as change occurred. You've got about 20% who do not want major changes to the status quo. So all of these factions are hovering around the 20 to 25 figure, although among opposition figures, it is indeed the exiled Prince Reza Pahlavi who is the most popular with 31% support. A rapper called Tumaj Salehi stands at about 6% and the jailed Nobel laureate Narges Mohammadi at 5%. And I guess what we don't know, what I don't know, and I apologize for that, but nobody knows everything, is how furiously opposed to each other the 80% would be. So if you've got 20% that like things as they are, you have a problem with any transition. But how big that problem is depends upon how united the other 80% are. The people who want change, the people who want change at whatever cost come in at 11%, or rather they don't care what the change is as long as change occurs. But that figure would be much higher if the questions were phrased differently? Would you rather have, for example, the Ayatollah in charge, or the monarch, or the secular republic, or an alternative means of government? They'd choose that over the Islamist regime, but, and you ask them objectively which one they want from a selection of choices, they're going to put four or five different things in order. Make it binary, and I imagine that support for anything other than the current regime would be really, really high. And the future, the safety, the security of the country and the population depends upon how cooperative and consensual those opposed to the current status quo prove to be. And I'm not sure I've learned much so far today about what that... I think it's probably fair to say that things are nowhere near as sectarian or as tribal or as fractured or as splintered as they have been in other countries where the West has implemented or accelerated regime change. And remember, these are often countries that have just been drawn on a map by Western diplomats, French and British diplomats, with rulers and pencils, riding roughshod over historic loyalties and even historic borders. But I don't know enough yet to know what happens in Iran when or if the mullahs are removed. Charmaine is in Epsom. Charmaine, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I think the first thing that everyone should just keep in their mind is that Donald Trump doesn't do anything for anyone except for himself.
Yeah.
And we know that Iran has one of the biggest oil reserves in the world. So we're talking, I think it's number four in right. terms of oil reserves. So that is his motivation.
Yeah.
You know, him and Netanyahu do not care about the Iranian people. I think that's one thing that we should remember. Calling it liberation and this and that is just, it's a red herring. It's just to get legitimacy from the public. You know, I think everybody with a few brain cells should understand that. Of course, that might work out.